Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Tie a minisode round the old oak tree. It's been 3 long years. Do you still want me? If I don't see a minisode round the old oak tree, I'll get on the bus, forget about us, put the blame on me. If I don't see a minisode round the old oak tree.
Wow. Now you're probably wondering, honestly, why on earth did he sing that song?
Why did you?
It's because it's minisode number 80, baby. And as everyone knows, as I already knew, because it's common knowledge and I didn't have to Google it this morning, the 80th anniversary is the oak anniversary. Woo! To celebrate, I planted you an oak tree somewhere.
That's really sweet. Thanks so much. I forgot You're about welcome. Our anniversary.
You know, I always knew this day would come when we started this podcast in 1942. I said, I guarantee that on our oak anniversary, the one that everyone cares about and everyone knows what it's called, you're going to forget. And you said, no, I won't. How dare you accuse me of that? And I said, we'll see. And I guess we saw.
We saw. Oh my gosh.
Here we
I'm
are
so
80 years
sorry.
Later. Shoot.
Shoot. Well, how can I make this up to you, buddy?
Make me an oak rocking chair.
Okay, you got it. Can we pause the podcast 1 second so I can carpentry this
pitch? Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give
okay.
me a minute. That's a hammer.
Zella, I know what tools sound like. You don't have to tell me. I love, I've always found it so interesting that sandpaper named itself. They were like, what do we call this tool? And then they used it and it went sand. And they said, oh my gosh, thank you. We don't have to come up with a name.
I know, right? It's honestly one of my favorite things. I'm so glad we got to capture it on the podcast. I made you one. It should be on its way to LA.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's so beautiful.
I made it extra big so that happy you could sink oak. Into it like a tiny, tiny man. Like those ones they have like on like the sides of highways where you get in them and you're like, and you take pictures in them because they're so big and you're like, whoa, this is a crazy experience. But like every gas station like on the side of a highway has one.
I you know what I love? People who live on the sides of highways who are just desperate, who have an entrepreneurial spirit and are like, what bizarre thing can we install to convince people to stop here?
Totally.
Obsessed with it.
I know, me too. Like the petting zoo in Scipio, Utah. Yeah.
Peggy Sue's in like Southern California that just has a bunch of metal dinosaur statues outside and below average food. Incredible. Obsessed with that place.
I know.
There's a place in like New Mexico where for like 100 miles before it, there's a billboard every 30 minutes that says, you won't believe it. Like, come and see the ninth wonder of the world. And then you go, and it's just essentially a dummy that's wrapped in gauze. And they're like, it's an alien.
Honestly, I love that.
That's incredible. Good for them.
Especially, like, the something about, like, Southwest's, like, obsession with, like, being around Area 51. Like, so, like, every desert place, like, somehow has, like, a ton of alien stuff. And you're like, what's going on here? And they're like, at this diner, you could see an alien. And it's like, oh, my gosh.
And the crazy thing is, they're all real.
Yeah, that's the thing, you guys.
I'm always like, and this one's a scam. and then I go, and it's always real.
That's yeah, like, I know.
This is a genuine extraterrestrial.
Little known fact about the Southwest is when you own a diner on the side of a highway, they actually like give you alien stuff.
And sometimes a little known fact alien. About extraterrestrials is that they love some 1950s American homestyle cooking.
I know, I do. Why wouldn't they? It's so yummy. It's like my favorite kind of food.
Yeah, they, you know, they're like, oh, I hear some Four Seasons and you're serving chili. I'm there.
Right?
Beep, boop, 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 boop. Here they come.
Oh my gosh, what's your diner order? We have been to many a diner together.
I don't know, because diners are like really, sometimes you're like really taking your life in your hands when you go to a diner,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like one time I got chili at a diner because I was in a chili mood and I was like, one, this is certainly from a can.
Yeah.
And two, I am definitely going to have diarrhea in about 45 minutes.
I don't think I've ever, like, I'm a certified chili lover. I don't think I've ever gotten chili from a diner, bro.
I do not recommend it. It was in Kingman, Arizona. It was a diner that had a picture of, Eugene Belcher in the window, and I said,
oh, I love
that's
that.
Illegal. You don't have the rights to that. And wow, the chili was not good. I truly think the safest diner food is usually breakfast food.
Yeah.
Like a pancake or a yeah. waffle situation. So I think that's what I get the most often because I'm not like taking my life in my hands when I order it.
Yeah, totally.
What about you?
I'm like generally a pretty adventurous eater, like at most places, I would say. Well, actually, maybe I'm not because I don't know if I'm actually going to like it. So I get the same thing over and over. But I'm not like a picky eater. That's what I'm saying. But at a diner, I always like I'm in like there's like three moods I could be in. I'm either getting like a chocolate sundae that I'm splitting with people, or I'm getting a short stack of pancakes, or I'm getting like some French fries, and that's mm-hmm. like it. I'm never going to a diner for like, you know, a burger. I'm usually getting like snack foods or like a combination of those three. And it's like, I'm just a 14-year-old, you know, picky yeah. eater, but it's a diner.
You're not like an extraterrestrial where like you'll eat anything they're serving in a diner.
No, I'm not going to get a can of chili at the diner.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's what's keeping the chili, the canned chili line in business. All those ETs, Martians love a good canned chili.
They do, like, and this that's okay.
This is unlike anything we have on Mars. We just eat red dust. I don't know.
And that's, I think the comforting thing about chili is like it's kind of similar in color and also maybe texture.
Mm-hmm. And so when it's really like, dry.
Yeah. You know, like, when you have dry chili.
This tastes like Mars, which famously doesn't have water. So I know science.
I know science, too. I know science, too. Have you ever been to Area 51?
For some reason, I thought you were going to ask if I'd ever been to Mars.
Yeah, that was my next question.
In which case, the answer is yes, I have.
I know.
But Area 51, no, I have not. I tried to go to Nevada as little as humanly possible. I'm going to be straight up with you. I really try to not set foot in that state, if at all possible.
Wait, did you say you have?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what about you? I hear you. No. There sure. was, well, I remember, we've talked about this on the Potteroni before, when it was, let's see, the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Stormberry 51. Yeah, I Minnesota thought about 51. It for a mini minute. But I, of course, I didn't go. But I actually had friends from, like, my hometown ward who went. And I was like, why the fuck did you go? I don't think they saw any aliens.
No, I think they did.
Well, if they did, they're doing a really good job keeping that secret.
Heyo.
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 Let's see them aliens. All right. Wow, happy 80th anniversary.
Yeah, happy Oaks anniversary, baby. This is apparently the last anniversary that has like a theme. From according to Google, I guess, I mean, this makes sense. Yeah. Most people die before they reach their 90th anniversary. So no one ever really thought it was important to name it.
Yeah.
So, chill.
I hear that. Maybe it's time to, like, blaze our own trail, name our own anniversaries.
Yeah. We'll be like, and this one is the floss anniversary. And we'll floss our teeth live on air. Wow, people will eat it up. They'll be like, this isn't gross at all. This is what I want to hear.
Maybe we'll get sponsored by a dentist.
Any dentist out there, if you want to sponsor our 90th minisode.
Send us some floss.
The dental floss anniversary.
RecoveryGleek@gmail.com. Send us an email. Are you ready to get into this minisode? Wait, introduce yourself.
I was about to.
Oh, okay, sorry. I just always forget about introducing ourselves, so I was like jumping the gun. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Hello, everyone. My name is Ian Allred. I do like diners, but like I only kind of like them. I don't. It's on like a level of I hate a diner to like I'm an extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. I'd say I'm a solid 7 on my love of diners.
Word.
But I'm a solid 10 on my love of being a mini gleek.
I love that. Hey, everyone. My name is Lena Knatzer. And frankly, when I go to a diner, the food is the least of my worries. I'm there for the coffee and I'm there for the 4 a.m. chats with my friends. I do love doing that. One time I stayed up all night long talking about Star Wars with two of my friends from a college who I like desperately wanted their approval and love. So I stayed up all night long with them. And then we went to a diner at like 7 a.m. And then I had a show of Joseph the next day at like 2. I had to like go to bed and then wake up for Joseph. I would never do that now.
No.
But I got a short stack of pancakes and a cup of coffee.
Heck yeah.
And I'm a mini gleek.
All right. Let's get into some emails, baby, about Lights Out.
Up first, we have a message from Kathara.
Hi, LPC and Princess Ian. Long email ahead. So sorry, I got carried away. I've been holding in this thought and was going to wait until next season to share, but I'm currently watching Lights Out and I can't hold on to it anymore. Glee has no concept of how to transition between emotions anymore. They take on these big themes, put them in a pocket inside of the universe of the show, and transition in and out of them without any regard for the characters or the audience. The transition between Shooting Star and Sweet Dreams is abysmal, as you've already discussed. The students should be way more distressed than they were written to be in the aftermath of what happened. Now they aren't even properly transitioning emotionally within an episode. The audience watches and listens to both writer and Kitty share these horrible stories of their past, and it's super emotionally taxing. This time around, I skip through most of those scenes because I just can't handle it. But the next scene is We Will Rock You? Are you joking? It's emotional whiplash. And I really like the rendition of the song, but the writers took no care in leading the audience into the ability to enjoy it. Glee writers do not care about the well-being of their audience, and it is so apparent in these last few episodes. Rant over. Love you guys. Consensual forehead kisses all around. Kathara, she, her. P.S. I personally started listening to this podcast under the cosmic understanding that eventually one of you would be sea-based and not in New York, so don't worry. Everyone is satisfied in this arrangement. P.P.S. Glee exists in a multiversal dimension where some plots span multiple days, some finish in hours, and somehow they all come to a conclusion at the same time within the same time frame. Did they in real life just start singing We Will Rock You after Ryder told his secret? Did they go home and come back and the power still wasn't restored? Is this club meeting multiple times in one day? No one knows. Kathara, I was watching this like a hawk. This as I like mentioned this in our maxisode, but Lights Out, the McKinley stuff covers 6 days, the blackout spanning 5 days, and then the lights come back on day 5, and then on day 6 they sing another song. And it was because I was tracking Ryder and Artie's costume changes.
Yeah.
And so every time they were in different outfits, pretty I was like, smart, well, this has to be another day.
Yeah.
And it is a span of 6 entire days that this episode takes place over.
That is so wild. But cancel school.
Which means, because the school week is only 5 days, that there's a weekend in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So, either what I believe is that the power went out on Monday, it came back on Friday, and then on Friday, Will was like, we should do an a cappella number, and then for the longest time happens on Monday.
Yeah.
But I think it's also more fun that like the power went out on a Wednesday and the school still didn't get it fixed over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And they came back Monday and Figgins was like, I don't know,
Mickey
just keep
May
using
High
flashlights.
Is wild. To talk about the transition between Kitty and Ryder at Breadsticks to We Will Rock You, when my roommate and I were watching that this episode, I literally, sorry you guys, I laughed because it was like so abrupt, you know, when like it's so inappropriate for you to laugh. I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, it was like, what the hell? Like, you're so right when you say they're so bad at like the transitions from emotional moments. Like, they don't know how to do it from episode to episode, and they do not know how to do it from scene to scene. Because it was like, what the heck? You couldn't have like one thing in there to like transition that. You just wanted to like rip the Band-Aid off and like show me people like banging on stuff. Come on.
Especially how that song starts with the like boom, 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 boom.
Mm-hmm.
Wild.
I know. It made me laugh. Like, I was like, I shouldn't be laughing right now.
I don't want to beat a dead horse, but you know, it is in fact a dead horse that I do love to beat, which is, if they are unable to handle these like dramatic scenes mm-hmm. and moments with grace, then don't handle them. Like, no one is begging you to put this stuff in the show.
Well, I think people are begging them, and I think that's the problem.
Oh, no, I think that's kind of true. There are, every once in a while, I will, you know, be on YouTube, usually, frankly, to screen record something to make a TikTok, and I will be reading the comments, and every once in a while, I'll stumble on a comment that says, like, I just think it's so incredible that Glee started as a show just about a singing choir, and then they ended up tackling eating disorders and school shootings and sexual abuse, and they have this whole laundry list. And I was like, you think that's incredible?
Yeah.
Like, to each their own, I guess.
I mean, I think I definitely agree, like, they shouldn't have done it. There is something to say that it's like, I don't know, it's certainly a brave thing to do.
I think there's a world where it's incredible that one show tackled all those issues, mm-hmm. but only if they were done,
they
like,
set out
treated
to do
with
it.
Respect
yeah.
and done well. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's incredible that Glee just tried to cash in on every aspect of human trauma.
No, I
think
I agree.
That's a little uncredible.
No, bow, I agree. Bow, 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 bow. Eek. Well, Kathara, thanks for your rant. I love it. What was I going to say? Kathara, thanks so much for your message. We really appreciate it. Thanks for ranting to us. Up next, we have a message from Belle.
Hey, Ian and LPC. Belle again. I just wanted to give you a few of my thoughts on this episode. I agree that it seems weird to me that there's a literal blackout at the school and the students still have to be there. There's never been a blackout at my school, but one time the boiler broke and we were off school almost every day for the rest of that week. During that week, they sent us work to do from home. Also, you're right. Why is ballet suddenly so important to all four of these people? I buy that it's important to Rachel because it's previously established that she's trained in ballet, despite Lea Michele's dancing abilities. And I can even buy that it's somewhat important to Isabel, considering we don't know an awful lot about her. But Kurt and Santana? Really? I do not buy that either of them did ballet as children. I would buy it more if it wasn't that they had done ballet, but if it was, this has a special place in my heart, but I never had a passion for doing it. For Kurt, it could have been that his mother took him to see a ballet when he was younger, which would make sense if it was a treasured memory of his. And for Santana, maybe it's that her abuela would try to teach her, but Santana never wanted to, so she has bittersweet feelings because she obviously misses her grandmother, but has complicated feelings for her based on what happened in season 3. Which is another thing which influences her view of the arts. Also, I can kind of buy that Artie would say Ryder was lucky to be sexually assaulted, but Sam Evans absolutely would not. I love Sam, and based off everything we know about him, he would never have that opinion. Kitty's arc in this episode was a very good one. It really helps adjust the viewer's perception of her. I think this was the main turning point for her as a character. I mean, she was kind of nice to Marley in dynamic duets, despite her encouraging Marley's eating disorder, but this shows a different side of her which we needed to see. In my opinion, this is one of the most boring episodes of Glee. I forgot they sang these songs, and I agree, At the Ballet was boring. But then again, the worst episodes are more fun to talk about. I hate to be a downer like I was last time, but I have to talk about this. The 8th and 13th of July were the anniversaries of Corey and Naya's deaths. R.I.P. legends. I'll say it until the day I die. Thank you so much for this podcast. It brings me so much joy. It makes me laugh without fail. Consensual forehead kisses. Love, Belle. Belle, I'm glad that you brought up Corey and Naya. Because we did not even realize that our most recent episode was dropping on the 13th of July. And I at least felt stupid when Wednesday hit and I was like, oh, we did not even mention this. And like our episode came out that day.
Yeah.
So thank you for bringing that up. It is, I don't know. It's Corey and Naya, just by all accounts and from like every, you know, behind the scenes footage video and from like how their cast members talk about them, just appeared to be such incredible lights. It's such a tragedy with how soon they were gone and how short their time on this earth was, but I'm very grateful that we have a piece of them forever immortalized in this show, as, you know, toxic and problematic as this show is, and as toxic and problematic as their characters are sometimes written. I'm glad they're in it. And they bring a lot of like love and beauty to these characters. We talk about it all the time. I love Finn Hudson, and I frankly think most of it is not because of how he's written. I think it's because Cory Monteith just has such a good energy pouring from him that I'm like, you know what, Finn, I'll overlook all the stuff did. You seem like a sweetie.
I know.
Well, and then also like Naya Santana is so incredibly funny, and she's got such great burns, and that is something that I love a lot about her character, but so easily could have just been, you know, the funny mean girl, but Naya brought so much depth and so much heart to her that I think, you know, the reason that Santana became a central character was because of Naya Rivera, because I think the writers were genuinely shocked at how incredibly funny Naya is, and like what a great performer she is and how fantastic her voice is. But more than that, I think they were shocked at how easily she was able to bring depth and heart and empathy to that character that wasn't super easy to bring those things to. And it just made such a compelling and interesting dynamic. And I don't think that would have happened with most other performers that could have been cast in that role.
Absolutely.
So thank you for mentioning that, Belle. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. It's just a huge loss.
No, I absolutely agree.
As for At the Ballet, yeah, it comes out of nowhere. It's so forced. It is so shoved in there. I do agree. I would 100% be on board for Kurt went to the ballet with his mom when he was younger, and maybe that's like what really got him interested in the arts. And that, although it would still be clear that they only put that in to justify this song, it would feel less out of left field than, oh, he fully took dance lessons and we've never talked about it before.
Yeah. I don't know. Like this whole At the Ballet thing is so wild to me. And that makes like both of these options that you're bringing up, Belle, like make way more sense to me other than these three took ballet class essentially all together, all growing up. But we're strangers to each other, like, but also it's very important to them, but also we've never talked about it before, but also blah, 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 you know?
But I do think at the end of the day, I don't think that At the Ballet was ever going to fully work in Glee. I think
they should have just worked, like, done it karaoke style, you know, like, let's not care what we're saying.
Yeah, it's such a product of the context with which it's presented in a chorus line. That I don't think it really lands when you try and apply it to an already established context in Glee. So I agree, Belle. I think your options are better. I do also think that this number was doomed from the start. And I agree, the numbers in this episode are so boring.
I know.
Terrible.
Which sucks so bad because At the Ballet is like the best song ever.
I know.
Belle, I hope you have the best day ever. Thanks so much for your message. Up next, we have a message from Madeline.
What's up, Glee FFs? Pause. What does that mean? I Googled
Glee
it.
Glee FFs. BFFs.
It's a pun. Madeline, that's so funny. I was so confused. Okay, back to the email. What's up, Glee FFs? Trigger warning, mentions of child abuse and assault. Once again, Glee is covering a serious topic they have no business covering for the sake of plot, and doing it with absolutely no tact. My himbo king, Sam Evans, making Ryder feel embarrassed about being ashamed of this traumatic event and how he should even feel lucky that it happened was shocking. Sam has been shown as a character who is kind, empathetic, and loyal to his friends when they are going through a hard time. So why was he so dismissive of Ryder's trauma? Sam was also abused as a minor. He was working as a stripper at 16 and bragged to Rory that during this time he was having sex with a bunch of his older clients. It's portrayed as something that he's proud of, because in media it's only abuse when it's an older man preying on a young girl, but not the other way around. Accepting that Ryder was abused means that he would have to come to terms with the fact that he was abused as well. Sam mentions that the younger man sleeps with an older woman trope is featured in a lot of popular coming-of-age 80s movies, which is part of the problem because it normalizes abuse and perpetuates the harmful misconception that men cannot be assaulted by women. If you tell boys that their abuse isn't valid and that not only is it wrong for them to feel traumatized by it, but that it's something that they should be proud of, it's only going to traumatize them further and prevent them from healing. Toxic masculinity strikes again. You both mean the world to me, and I'm so proud of you. All my love, Madeline, she, her, Baltimore.
Madeline, thank you so much for this message. And it's a perspective that I fully forgot about, that Sam has absolutely been in a situation that would maybe make him feel this way. Like, you know, when we talk about him, you know, working at the strip club, like, you know, we've talked about that before. We've talked about how, like, that was fully not okay for the people who were, you know, employing him. He should not have been there. He should not have been having sex with a bunch of his clients. Like, all of that, pardon me, all of that was, like, definitely abusive. And maybe would, like, fuck up his perception of, like, what's appropriate and what's not. So I totally, fully forgot about that. So thank you for bringing it up.
This is also the weird territory that Glee always falls into because they keep trying to change the world and do these dramatic plot lines where it's like Glee wants to exist in a farcical, satirical world where, you know, the rules are different and things are not as serious as they are in the real world until they don't want to exist in that world anymore. And so it's like, okay, I was informed during season 3 that Sam being a stripper was something I shouldn't like think too hard about. And it was like kind of funny and kooky. Mm-hmm. And now I'm supposed to be taking that kind of thing seriously.
Right? Right.
Like, I don't know. It's just, they can't ever, and they do that. You know, it was the same thing with Marley's ED that it's like, okay, I don't think it was super cool that it was ever a joke on the show, but it was like, this is a thing that was a joke for a few seasons. And now like, it's no longer a joke. And it's just, Glee is so inconsistent with the rules of the world. And if they are real world rules where, you know, things that are a big deal in the real world are a big deal in the show, or if they're show world rules where it's like, I know that if this happened in real life, it's something we should discuss, but like in the world of the show, it's not a big deal. So just go with it.
Yeah.
And they keep just trying to play both sides of that line.
Totally.
And it's very confusing.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a great, this is unintentional, but that's a great segue into this next email because I have very similar thoughts about what Kat has to say.
Well, let's hear what Kat has to say.
Trigger warning, sexual abuse. Hi, Lena and Ian. My name's Kat and I'm a longtime listener, but first time emailer. You always say my one big opinion on every episode, so I never felt the need to, LOL. I'm 27 and I'm a secondary school teacher from Scotland.
International listener!
As a teacher, I always hyperfixate on Mr. Shu and, like you guys, share such a deep dislike for him and how he teaches. Seriously, how is this guy teacher of the year? I totally agree with you, mostly on how the subject of writer's experience is portrayed being actually semi-okay for once. However, Mr. Shu's reaction really bothers me. I've thought this before, but Mr. Shu's lack of willingness to call pupils out is wild to me. When Sam and Artie start talking about how lucky Ryder is, all Mr. Shu says is, "Guys, this is not something to high-five about. Ryder, I'm sorry, but I'm obligated to report this." Sam continues and he goes, "We get it, Sam, thanks." That is it. Firstly, absolutely Mr. Shu is obligated to report this. Even if the babysitter was in jail, Ryder could just be saying that. So for one thing, that should be investigated. For another, Ryder is clearly traumatized and in need of some support. So Mr. Shu should be passing this on to the relevant department at the school. Here it would be guidance or pastoral care. Not sure what you guys have over in America. At the very least, a wee follow-up conversation in private to check on him is surely needed from his teacher who just heard him announce a deep trauma in his class. Instead, all he does is sit and look at best sad and at worst annoyed. Secondly, if a pupil starts spouting something like what Sam said in front of you, you tell them off, kick them out of the room, and make it very clear to them why what they are doing is inappropriate and unhelpful. I'd even be taking it further and going by the behavioral code in the school so that they know how serious an issue this is. They are clearly upsetting Ryder, so why does he only half-heartedly check it? We've seen this kind of inaction from Mr. Shu so many times. I was always shook by how he just sat back and let kids be insulted during Glee Club, but this for me absolutely crosses the line. No teacher in their right mind would let this be the end of the conversation, surely. Anyway, I felt like this needed commenting on, as I hate the thought of somebody being hurt slash made to feel uncomfortable in front of a teacher and it just being accepted that the teacher doesn't need to do anything. Teachers have such a responsibility because there's so many kids' point of contact on so many things, from small to huge, and so they should be able to trust that their teacher has their best interest at heart at all times. Love you guys, and thanks for reading, Kat, she, her. P.S. Lena, I absolutely die at your jokes about what you're reading at school reflecting your real life. This was such a thing when I was at school, and I always choose the texts we study and hope they relate to their own personal dramas.
I thought those were your jokes, Ian.
That's right. Kat, listen to the last episode. That's actually an Ian Albert original. Yeah. It did not come from Lena.
Yeah, that's actually not something that came from me at all. Onto your message, though. I agree with this so much. I can't even express. Like, I hate this show for so many reasons. But one of the ones that keeps coming up for me is... they try and lie to us and tell us how safe of a space this is for these kids and how seen and heard and protected they all feel and like they can actually be themselves and like say the things that are on their mind. And then we see Mr. Shu just like, you know, fully letting this all go down and like not stopping it at all. And this happens a lot where like, you know, Ryder is transphobic too unique. Oh my God, there's a big scary bug on my wall. I hate the East Coast. What do I do?
Kill it or ignore it. Those are the only two options.
Ignore for now, kill later. But I'm nervous it'll disappear. Kill now. Ew! It was a millipede. It was like, and it was scurrying at me.
Anything with over six legs is...
too many legs!
1,000 legs? What do you need all those legs for?
Seriously, what do you need all those legs for? What was I saying?
You were talking about how they always trick us into thinking that the Glee Club is a safe space, but then we always see who will not protect these kids. You specifically were saying, like, with Ryder, with Unique, with Ryder's transphobia towards Unique.
Yeah, totally. And we saw that. We saw that with that and how, like, Will made it very clear that he had no intention of protecting his students in that instance. He's making it pretty clear he has no intention of protecting his students in this setting either. And I think like, obviously this is a show that, like, has its own agenda where they, like, want to facilitate a conversation here so they can't have, like, a teacher shutting it down because they, like, need to, like, hit a certain plot point, if you know what I mean. But it's also, like, don't tell me Will is a good guy then, you know? Like, don't lie.
This is the thought that I was like, this transitions really well into what Kat has to say. Glee wants Will to be a good teacher by real world standards, but then at the same time, like you said, they want to facilitate conversations, which means that they have to let bad examples play out on the TV show. So they constantly are towing the line of having Will completely ignore awful things that his students do that any good teacher would shut down. But then every once in a while, having Will, you know, respect his students or like take care of them or protect them by real world standards. And so then it's like this jarring, it exists in a world where, you know, a safe space means something different than it does in the real world, but only until they want the opposite to be true. And then suddenly a safe space is the same thing. Like, for example, you know, one of my favorite things in Glee is the way that Santana roasts her fellow classmates. In the real world, I would hope that a teacher would not allow her to do that. But I'm glad that Glee exists in a world where that's not the case, because like so many iconic moments would be gone. Mm-hmm. And so I'm fine for Glee to exist in a world where it's like, we know that in our universe, if kids spoke like this to each other in class, the teacher should shut it down. But in this universe, that's just how kids talk to each other. And like, that's just the reality we live in. And that's totally cool. And I'm on board with that. But then they keep having to, you know, change the rules around. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but essentially...
No, it makes sense to me. Absolutely.
Yeah, but essentially, like, they really, really... It is so important to these writers that we view Will as a good teacher. Mm-hmm. And so they keep trying to put in hints that he's a good teacher by our world standards. But then it's also really, really important to them that they have these conversations where they kind of need bad examples to exist in order to facilitate conversation. And then it's like, okay, well, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Yeah, either he's a good teacher by our standards, or you have these bad examples play out in his class. You can't have both.
Yeah, totally. I absolutely agree.
It's also weird because they could easily just have these bad examples happen outside of the choir room.
I know.
And be like, there's no teacher there, but they constantly are happening under Will's watch.
In front of Will, yeah. And like, I don't know if I'm like misremembering, but I feel like we weren't having, well, I'm not misremembering. We were not having these big of conversations in the classroom in earlier seasons. Frankly, we weren't having like very like big conversations in comparison to what we're having now back in the earlier seasons at all. And if they were happening like in the kids' personal lives, you know, like it wasn't happening under like Will's supervision and like as a class conversation.
I genuinely think one of Glee's biggest downfalls is their need to try and make Will likable, which I do understand why they feel that need, because, you know, Glee is kind of a thesis statement for why the arts are important in schools. Yeah. So you do kind of want the teacher in charge of the arts to be likable. But like, if they just allowed Will to kind of be a neglectful teacher, and that was kind of the joke.
Yeah.
Is that Will was kind of neglectful and like in his own business. It weirdly, I think, would make him more likable, if that makes sense. I just feel like, and this is such a dumb example, but sorry. It's in the way that like when you watch The Office, you can have moments where you empathize with Michael Scott or like Michael Scott because you're like, he's bad at his job, and the show is not trying to hide the fact that he's bad at his job, and all the characters know that he's bad at his job. And so I don't feel angry at that. I'm like, why doesn't anyone else realize this? So then when he has moments of humanity, I can empathize with him because we're all on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas with Will, when he has moments of humanity, I'm like, no, but why won't anyone acknowledge that he's bad at his job? Mm-hmm. Like, why are they all trying to gaslight me into thinking he's great?
Exactly. I think that's a great example.
Well, thank you, Kat.
Yeah, thank you, Kat. And thank you, everyone, for listening, because that's the end of our mini-sode. Have a nice day.
Real fast, we're going to do a relative pitch game with these boring songs. Lena,
I'm going.
There are 6 songs in this episode. Let's see if you can name half of them without looking. Okay. I know. I feel like these songs are so unmemorable.
Okay. I've got We'll Rock You.
Mm-hmm.
At the Ballet.
Uh-huh.
And then Ryder sings that song that was also on the Glee project. That is Everybody Hurts.
Yay!
Is that half?
That's half. I'm impressed. I don't know if I could have done that, genuinely.
What are the other ones? I couldn't even tell you what the other ones were.
Okay. The other ones you missed were You've Lost That Loving Feeling.
Oh, yes. I would have never remembered.
Little Girls from Annie.
Oh, Shree.
And For the Longest Time by Billy Joel.
Oh, Shree. These are all songs I like enjoy. Like, I like Annie a lot. I love Billy Joel. I like Sam.
I know. It's weird. They just are so... I mean, I do think Little Girls is fun in the episode, but there's just so little happening with them.
Yeah, totally.
Sing at the Ballet.
Okay.
But do the monologue. Do Maggie's monologue. And then we'll see if you spoke it at the same tone as...
Okay, perfect.
Carrie Bradshaw.
Daddy always thought that he married beneath him. That's what he said. That's what he said. When he proposed, he informed my mother he was probably a very last chance. And though she was 22, though she was 22, though she was 22, she married him. I don't know.
Okay, well, that's what he said. That's what he said. Whoa, that sounded bad. It's like a G flat to A flat to E scenario. No, a G flat to A flat to E flat. And then D flat, E flat, B flat, maybe? That is correct. What I said was right.
Everything. Daddy always thought that he married beneath him. That's what he said. That's what he said.
You're a half step sharp.
Aw, damn. I knew it was close. I would like you to sing Little Girls.
My dream. Some women are dripping with diamonds. Honestly, I'm just going to commit to that key. Who knows what it is? Some women are dripping with pearls. Lucky me, lucky me, look at what I'm dripping with. Little girls. If any casting directors are listening, that was not my Miss Hannigan that I would give you on stage. I promise it'd be better than that.
Okay.
So some women are dripping with diamonds, B to A flat to G flat to E. Whew, I'm off, baby.
Damn.
I'm a step and a half sharp. That is a certified A flat.
Damn. That's your mini-sode. Happy 80th anniversary. See you for 90.
Happy 80th, everyone. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your joints. We're getting up in age. You know, be easy on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's really getting hard out in these streets.
Yeah.
Guilt trip your grandchildren into visiting you. Those selfish punks certainly are not going to do it without being guilted into it.
Yeah, little brats.
Have you seen the TikTok where they're interviewing someone's filming their local news like off their TV, and they're interviewing some woman who I think just turned 100, and they ask her what her secret to turning old is. I mean, what her secret to reaching that age is, and she says, "Well, I just don't know how to die, so I might just stay forever."
I love that. That's so funny. That is so funny. I haven't seen that.
That is, it is genuinely very sad because when you reach a certain age, your body is just like,
yeah, it's not been through wear and tear. That long. Yeah.
One of my grandmas did reach that age where she was so over still being alive. But it is very tragic, but like many tragic things, it's also a little funny.
I know.
When old people reach that age where they're like, ugh, God, just kill me already.
I know.
I have done everything I wanted to do.
They wake
I'm
up
over
and
it.
Like, chase. I know. I've totally known old people just like that where they're like, I don't know. Like, I'm just kind of here. Like, I'm not doing anything special.
Yeah. My grandma reached an age where literally the only thing she would eat was chocolate because she was like, like, it's been 93 years, so, I mean, at this point, I'm going to eat what I want to eat. Like, I don't care.
Only eating chocolate?
Yeah, it's like the only thing they could get her to eat.
That is so charming. I love that. Someday we'll have our 90th podcast anniversary, and all well, it'll be the chocolate and the floss mini-sode.
Yeah, the chocolate and dental floss anniversary is the 90th. So Hershey's, if you want to get in on that.
Did you know there's a town in Pennsylvania called Hershey, PA?
I did.
And they, I think, make Hershey chocolate there.
Yeah, is
and
that
like Hershey Park is there.
Yeah, is that where it started? Because that was my assumption, but now I don't actually know if that's true.
I have no idea.
I might have made that up.
But I do know that when you drive around the town, all the, like, the street lamps are Hershey Kisses.
Oh, that's so cute.
Isn't it the cutest?
Then I would think it started
I've been there.
There.
I don't know. I didn't go on, like, a tour. Otherwise, I just drove through to, like, go to a BBQ.
Its headquarters are in Hershey, Pennsylvania. It was founded by Milton S. Hershey. So did they name the town after Milton S. Hershey then?
Probably. That makes sense to me. Someone from Pennsylvania, let us know. All right, everyone.
Hershey started in 1894, the company, and the town was founded in 1903 for the Hershey Company workers to live. So, yes, it was literally founded around chocolate, that whole town.
Nice.
Owes its existence to Hershey's chocolate. That's crazy.
That town is cute as shit. Everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for being here in general. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We love you so much. Good central forehead kisses all around. Mini ones. These are tiny ones. These are little.
Yeah. Get out of here with those regular sized forehead kisses. Disgusting.
No. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.